You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, hey, it's everyone's favorite forgotten Power Ranger, Drew Gasparini here with another episode of Now We're Talking, the podcast responsible for getting Joe Biden elected. I'm completely enthused about today's episode because we don't just have one amazing guest, we have two. Yes, that's right, today is a twofer. One is an actor who's done it all from Jersey Boys all the way to his performance as Dr. Pometer in the original cast of the hit musical Waitress. The other is an actress, comedian, and writer who's been seen in the Broadway revival of Godspell, and she co-created the award-winning web series Brooklyn Sound, among many other things. They are my good friends and a couple of my favorite people. Now we're talking with Drew Gehling and Julia Madison. Hello, I am here with Julia Madison and Drew Gehling. How are you guys?
Hello, hello.
Hi, hi.
We're good. I'm very really happy to be here.
I'm so thrilled you're both here, and you're the first couple on the show, and I'm sorry that that's what I asked of you. I asked that you both do this at once. It was sort of a killing two birds thing, but also you guys are just so delightful as a pair. I thought this would be a really fun conversation. So I am sorry that it's annoying, but that's what it is.
It's so annoying. We're so annoyed to be together.
Yeah,
to be sitting
on our couch together.
On the couch in the home that you live in together.
But we haven't been for seven straight months doing this exact same thing.
Exactly. Right. You made it this far. You can handle one podcast with an annoying conversation with your pal, Drew.
Hey!
So what we're going to talk about today is just you guys. That's all. I'm just interested in you guys because here's what I've realized. All these friends I have, people I look up to, people I admire, and a lot of them are my friends within the industry of show. I realize, and I think it's a byproduct of being in show business, I don't know one fucking thing about any of my friends. All we talk about... All we talk about is where we're at and what's next.
What's next?
Yeah.
What's next? What's next? I was almost going to call this podcast, so what else is going on?
Yeah.
What else you got going on?
Yeah.
So today I really want to go back and like talk about how we all got where we are instead of where we're going next, because sometimes it's fun to dig into a little nostalgia, but it really does paint a picture of who we are as humans and artists and the whole thing. So if that's cool with you guys, I'm going to kind of ask joint questions and then some specifically geared questions.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with Drew Gehling because I know Drew a little less than I do Julia. So I want to talk to you, Drew, who I refer to as the more handsome, more successful Drew.
I was waiting for the for which exact title it was going
to
be.
I always give you something. I always make sure to put myself down when I introduce you. intimidating.
And somehow I let it happen. Like, I just allow it. I allow it. I'm like,
it's gracious of you. It really is. By the way, I don't know if you guys can tell. Can you see this insane, like, shrine to my community theater past behind me?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I see a Singing
Isn't
in the Rain
wild?
Up there.
There's a Singing in the Rain? Let me tell you something about Singing in the Rain. I don't know anybody in my family who was in that show. I don't know why that poster's here. Like, these are all shows we've all done and been a part of, and I don't know that. I don't know who did that. I don't know why that's there.
Somebody stole
it. I think my mom is going home to home and taking community theater memorabilia from other children who are doing their parents more proud than her actual children did.
She's going for the whole set. You know?
Yeah, she's going for the whole set. She's trying to fill the wall with the canon of every musical that was ever written. Anyway, back to our very handsome and much more successful than I friend, Drew Gehling. Talk to me, man. You have a career that is not interesting to me only because people will get there. We'll get there. People can Google that shit. We could list your resume off. It's impressive. If you don't know who Drew Gehling is, Google his ass and you'll be amazed at the things he's done. Here's what I want to know. Where are you from? What was it like in the household you grew up in? And I already know a little portions of Julia's childhood because we shared an office and we got into talking every now and again, and she's gone into detail about her absolutely insane imagination. And it makes sense. I can see how Julia navigated her goofy ass into show business. Where was that in your family? What was the support like? What were your parents like? And what were your sibling situation?
I'm one of five kids. I'm the oldest of five.
Where? Children. Oh, you're the oldest of five. Oh my!
The oldest of five children: Patrick, Marin, Hub, and Connor are my siblings. Hub and Connor.
Shout out to numbers 2 through 5.
Bam! The youngest are twins. They're young. Mm-hmm. I mean, please, they're like 30 years old now. But
I'm 32.
My man.
Yeah. But I grew up in Greensboro, North Carolina. So like deep, it's not really like super deep south because it's in this county in North Carolina called Guilford County, which is a really pretty liberal bastion in the middle of the state that is.
It's not necessarily what I refer to as the scary South.
Yeah, it's not really. It's not really. It was pretty forward thinking, and there was a lot of like arts and schools, and a lot of like community theater, and a lot of there was a real appreciation for all things kind of theatrical, right? So there, like, that was an option for extracurricular activities, and because of my family was like super sporty, right? So my dad. And always like coached all of my siblings in my like sports when we were little. And so it was like a really kind of sports driven household. And it wasn't,
was there a specific sport that you in particular like excelled at or really loved? Or
I was on the swim team. I was on the swim team like a fiend as a kid. Like I was obsessed with it. And it's weird to think about.
And he's a swimmer.
Was,
it's like
capital W was, and it's
once a swimmer, always a swimmer, my friend. Look right? How tall you are. I bet your wingspan is like 9 miles
Michael
on each side.
Oh
yeah, yeah, you know, just doing the butterfly. But we like went, you know, the minute I kind of discovered that the performance, I guess, was kind of something that I really enjoyed. My parents were super supportive of it. They were like, you know, as long as it's going to inspire you to want to go every day and I'm not going to have to drag you there, because they'd seen what it was like when they had to drag me to practice or something that I didn't want to do. It's torture. Right. I mean, I have a 7-year-old now. Taking her somewhere she doesn't want to go is like, oh, God, it's the worst.
Yeah.
So
what kinds of things are you signing her up for that she just dreads, by the way?
Oh, well, we tried soccer with her. Hated it. Uh-huh. Hated it.
Too much, just like, too much feet action. I agree. I'm with
way
her.
Way too
much.
Too
much feet.
Yep. You know? But it was something that I really liked. But it also at the same time, and this I think is still true, it kind of stressed me out. It stressed me out even then as like a little kid. And I think that's still a part of the way I work. Like I'm kind of like... I get to be a little bit of a stress case when I get into the room with buddies. And it's like, it's funny how my parents would like restrict my show participation to like one a season. They were like, all right, that's
like
it.
One
that's
musical or one play. A
yeah.
Season?
It was like that. It was like you play one sport or you do one show, because they, you know, I had other siblings that they also had to take to practice and do stuff. So it was like, it kind of had to happen in moderation with everybody else's stuff, which I think in hindsight was pretty cool. It made me kind of appreciate them and what they were doing.
Well, imagine that balance of trying to be supportive. I mean, it sounds like you were really blessed with your parents, by the way, still together or no?
Yeah. Yeah. Jim and Julie are the best.
Shout out to Jim and Julie. But you had, I'm from a family of four. See, you're always one better than me, Drew. A Drew always one better than me. You're one foot taller and you're one sibling more. But I know that Julia and I have talked about this. Julia, you have very supportive parents because they've allowed you to be the insane human that you are, just like my parents have. And I just look at my parents and marvel, because Julia has a sister. You have an entire litter in your family, Drew.
Yeah.
And you're a father now, and Julia, you guys are living together and you're doing a lot of co-parenting within the house together. What are some moments you saw as a kid where you were like, oh, my parents are nailing this?
They always like made sure we were heard, you know?
Yeah.
Even if you were being an unreasonable brat, which God knows I was just the worst sometimes, there was never a question of whether or not what you were feeling or what you needed was going to be an issue.
Right.
And it's something I've kind of tried to hold on to a bit as a parent, which is like to just make sure that like, even though her experience might seem a little outlandish to me in this moment right now, to kind of always try to just, in some, Jules is like hearing this because she sees me go through like billions of negotiations every day. But like, you just kind of try to just make sure that what she's feeling is real and important and valid and hopefully like those passions and the things that she likes and enjoys can be something that I can help her find and enjoy more and
that's all a result of your parents with you experience a great childhood
It's like when they saw that I was like this really passionate kid, they were like, well, you know, let's try theater, let's see if that's something that he enjoys. And the minute that they found that I enjoyed it, it was like, well, great, we know what his outlet is. And it became just that. It was like, because school was always important.
Sure.
Like being well-rounded was always important. Being a member of the family was always important. But to have the thing that was uniquely yours was also really important. And and I really count myself so lucky that they found that for me. And they helped me find that when I was like in third grade. And from there,
right,
it was like, you know, when you kind of know what makes you tick, or you're rather starting to learn what makes you tick at that age, that's awesome to be a parent and see it and go like, okay, all right, at least now we know where you'll find your people, we know where you'll find like an outlet for the creativity that you have and a place to put the feelings that you have.
Was there a moment ever, and I'm going to open this up to both of you guys, because you both have navigated life into the arts quite successfully, and you're both completely multiversed performers, and you both had support for the most part, as I can tell here, from your family. Was there a moment, and I get so fascinated by family because, you know, there's like none that's exactly the same as the next. Like each family, that's why they make such good plays and dramas. Family is so interesting to me. Was there ever a moment in either of your guys' upbringing where there was the suggestion, and this is where I feel like we are all uninteresting, if it's the answer it might be. Was there a suggestion of, well, we're glad you found this outlet, yes, but now that you have this hobby, you need to find another outlet that can pay you and that can support you? Was there ever any of that rhetoric in your family?
No.
No. I think about it like...
Well, we're boring. All right. Okay.
But you know what it was? It wasn't as if it was just full and complete. Follow your dreams. Good luck. Fly away. We support you no matter what. It was my dad is a brilliant businessman, like a mind that I don't think would ever let us, myself or my sister, pursue anything without pragmatic hard work and learning the details and the ins and outs of an entire system of it. You know what I mean? So whereas my mom was so deeply supportive in the pursuit of it and encouraged us in those ways and has, you know, and to this day is like the most supportive.
Your mother's a dancer and an artist.
That's right. She's an artist.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And my sister now is a working, very successful visual artist. Yeah. Yes. So it's funny. My sister and I, in different ways, found artistic pursuits, but I think with I always say like the combination between my mom's experience and encouragement as an artist and my dad's business mind was kind of like, yes, in no way are we ever going to set you back from pursuing this, but you have to go all the way through school. You're going through high school, you're going to college, you're doing the full academic journey. And in pursuing this, you're going to have a business mind, be an entrepreneur, figure out how to hustle and navigate and not just show up and see what happens, like turn any opportunity into something new. So I think it wasn't ever it was never considered a hobby. Cause honestly, I have no memory of ever wanting to do anything else. I was one of those like 3 years old coming up with characters type thing, you know, like,
it's, yeah, no, exactly. So, what I said, you were an insane child. If I had a kid who, and I know we all have imaginations, but if I had a child who was literally talking to nobody, like if I walked into a room and saw you like having a conversation with imaginary friends, I would slowly back out of the room and be like, how can I get rid of this child?
They're like, oh no, she's too much. She's too much. Yeah, completely. And I think what's so great to think about is like I look back and I'm like, my parents heavily allowed me and encouraged me actively to believe in magic and trust my imagination as real as anything else. But the realities of how hard it can be and what it is, and okay, you want to try this now, like I wanted to be, if I pivoted from acting and wanted to be like a singer-songwriter or do this or that, they're like, all right, but if you want to do this, here are, you know, my dad would save like articles about how people are doing this and what kind of equipment you need and what kind of stuff you'd write. Like it was encouragement with practical steps forward, I think.
Were you ever the kind of child who would get, you know, I think we all are guilty of this sometimes, but you'd get like the email from the mom being like, oh, I read this thing about Lin-Manuel Miranda and I thought of you, and I'm so fucking annoyed that I'm reading it because like I feel guilty if I don't, and I don't really, and I get mad at the article. And then somebody in the business who is not affiliated to my family at all will send me the same article and I'll read it and be like, oh, this is... this is career changing and life changing. And I'm like not giving my mom any credit because she's my mom. Is that just me? Am I just an absolute punk asshole?
Oh, I think that's all children, right? We're all
children. To an extent, right?
Yeah, there's always going to be some degree of defense of people who know us better than anyone and us saying like, but you don't know me.
Yeah, it's always to your parents who know you best,
right,
too.
They
know better than ourselves, probably. And we're like, you don't get it.
Right.
You
just don't get it. Damn it. You got me again.
I think that is actually a byproduct of innately being uninteresting. Here we are, three white people talking about going into the arts because our parents fucking supported us in that insane idea. We have
We're
nothing
the worst.
To... Yes. Yeah. I get frustrated sometimes when I'm writing a song that's really brooding and like angsty, and I listen back to it. I go, what is my problem? I have the greatest life I basically always have. Why am I digging for these issues in my mind just to get something out of me? Do you guys ever feel like you're forcing something?
Oh yeah, all the time. You know, where if the deepest question is why don't they understand me better?
Feels like
the least actable and least interesting thing to play. But
yeah,
I
100%.
Yeah, I find a deep freedom in comedy because I think I tried to be taken seriously. Like I think of like, okay, in high school, I made a singer-songwriter album. I made a full album at 16.
It's good.
We're gonna play that album right here in the podcast.
Clip.
Here's a clip. My friends found it recently and I revisited it, and it was a genuine attempt as a you know, high school student to think I was being really kind of amazing and honest. And I listened to lyrics that were like, some days this place feels like a prison cell. and my favorite line was, she called me on the phone so late last night, even the moon was getting rest. And I was so obsessed with my whole life. I was like, I want to be a rock star. I want to be a singer songwriter. I want to be a musician. I want to play. And I found like always, I think from day one, humor was my greatest attractor, the thing that I always, the light I would just zombie walk to, you know?
Right. Sure.
And, but at the same time, I think I for so long wanted to kind of be taken seriously in that way. And like, I think as probably by college, there was an awareness shift in myself where I think, per your question and that boring thing, it's like I find great freedom and joy in making fun of myself and circumstances. And I think I'll never go back now because I think there's always more humanity and empathy and connection to be made from like observing the situation and how ridiculous I am to even try to do something. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
I find truth in that. Yeah. And I find absolutely. Freedom in that.
I think being self-aware, you know what I mean? Self-awareness and self-deprecation are two very powerful tools when it comes to the work that you create as someone who is raised without any real problems. You know, it's like, it's inventing the work, basically. Julia, you mentioned like kind of zombie walking toward comedy, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and just in terms of the stuff you've done. But first I want to ask Drew, growing up, and Julia, this is also for you because it's kind of a different question, but growing up, I want to know, this is really, really niche, perhaps.
Go.
I'm talking like 90s. Can we go to the 90s
yes,
for a minute?
Yes, please.
Oh, man. Oh,
like
yeah.
every day on my
Don't
Spotify.
Don't you miss it?
Baby. I'm wearing a flannel shirt right now. It's cool.
Yeah, man. Every day on my Spotify, I get knocked down. All right. So.
Oh, my God. By the way, Annie, every day now, is walking around rocking around our house going, I'm just a teenage dirtbag baby.
Oh, why is that song in her ether? You guys,
she loves Wheatus.
We play Wheatus. We play that one song.
She loves Wheatus.
That one song just always comes back on the playlist. And she
that is so amazing. Oh, wait. While we're talking about kids, I got to tell you real quick. My nephew, who I love so much, I've been in California and I've been able to hang with him a bit. He's 5 years old. He has memorized word for word The Nightmare Before Christmas, the whole movie.
Oh my God.
Whoa. And my brother goes, watch this. This is Halloween. He just kind of starts humming the song a little bit. And my nephew is like yards away. And all I see in the distance is him turning around going, in this town, don't be. It's like so animated, but he just gets triggered by any lyric and he just dives right into the whole song. Anyway.
I'm going to encourage you to write that we have the month of November, I'm going to encourage you to maybe during this time off, film him doing a full production of Nightmare Before Christmas because you can and because the world would want to see that.
Yeah.
The world does need that. You're right. I didn't get on TikTok for nothing, kids.
No, no, no.
That's
right.
That's big news there.
But the question I was getting to, back to the 90s, let's go back to where it's a little comfier, a little not 2020, a little bit more Clinton, a little less Trump. I want to hear what your favorite Nicktoon was. I want to know what your favorite band of the 90s was. And like, let's get as iconic 90s as we can. I think we are all products of being 90s kids to some extent, 80s and 90s kids for sure. And what was the Disney cartoon theme song that you can't unsing? Do you know what I mean?
Gummy bears bouncing here and there and everywhere.
Yes,
high adventure that's beyond compare. They are the gummy bears.
Yes, sir.
Man, loved it. Oh, I can do them all. Tailspin.
Did that same guy write Tailspin's amazing? Did that guy write all of those songs? Because they all kind of live in the same thing. And I hope he's a trillionaire living in a castle somewhere at this point. My favorite song, theme song of all time, just because you got us jump started, Drew, because they're always one-upping me, Drew, you handsome devil.
Go, hit it.
My favorite is, ready, here we go. Darkwing Duck, when there's trouble, just call DW. Darkwing Duck, let's get dangerous. Yes!
That song was so Prince. I mean, it was like Prince.
It was completely Prince. It was like, it flew over my head how cool that was when I was a kid. And also the tag of this is a complete tangent, but I'm having a great time talking about this.
Yeah.
The tail end of the Goof Troop. Remember that cartoon, the Goof Troop?
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what the words are, but I believe it sounded something like this. Going to the Goof Troop. It's like this like crazy trumpet kind of thing. Ooh, that shit was sick. Julia, how about you?
Tight.
Go.
Oh God. Theme songs. I'm in the mix of like, you got your DuckTales, you've got your...
Yeah.
I will say, as we've talked about, Goofy Movie was everything. To the point musically where, like, to this day, if you see me on the streets of New York walking down the street, I'll probably be listening to After Today.
100%.
Even now.
Yeah.
There's something about...
It's so musical theater. I love it.
On my butt. I think that whole soundtrack is brilliant. I loved it. But there's such a range. Okay, so you're talking about like bands. We're talking
bands, Nicktoons. Yeah, I wanna like feel the '90s all over me right now.
I Okay, so in fourth or fifth grade, I remember the day I first heard Britney Spears' Baby One More Time on the radio. And I was like, who is this? And then I went to Warehouse Records in San Francisco
to buy her single.
And I wore it out. I thought it was the greatest new hit song. And then I traded it with my friend Ramsey Dudum for his Papa Roach CD.
Because I love Papa Roach.
And Ramsey just wanted a picture of Britney Spears because his parents were strict.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't get that.
That's what I remember vaguely.
It was a different time.
It was a different time when 30-year-old guys could buy like this oversexed 16-year-old poster for their child. I think that's very, very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, Britney Spears was a game changer for a lot of us for a lot of separate
reasons.
Many different reasons, I'm sure. But my favorite part about your story is the transition, so seamless, from Britney Spears to Papa Roach, Cut My Life Into Pieces. Is that the song I'm assuming you fell in love with when it comes
absolutely.
To Papa Roach?
I think I simultaneously... I was obsessed with Green Day. I was obsessed with Papa Roach, The Offspring. My first concert was Green Day.
Oh my God, The Offspring.
And in sixth grade, I saw my babysitter took me and my friend to see Green Day. The Living End opened for them. The Living End and Green Day at the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium in San Francisco.
Yes.
And I, like sixth grade, I was into a big Bay Area punk phase, but I also loved, like, they were pop and mainstream at that time, or pop punk, whatever. But I was very much into rock as well as pop, because I, at the same time, had like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys posters in my room. And like, I think I was just obsessed with music in every single way. I also had Oldies But Goodies CD that I wore out, and a 70s double disc thing that I love disco. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I just found everything in music in those years. And so whether it was like all 90s madness, or I'd also, you know, the now that's what I call whatever started happening around then as well.
That's so right. It was definitely in the 90s when Now This Is Music. What a shithead title for any compilation. Now this is music.
This is what I call
anything
music.
Else that's not on this compilation is just shit.
Yeah.
So many. Yeah. I don't know. I had a phase in high school where I went punk. I was at a
no.
Spot. Yeah, man.
I don't buy that, because I was about to say I peg you as a bare naked ladies guy through
and
through.
Well, yes, you do know all the lyrics.
Oh yeah, everyone alive can sing one week start to finish.
Yeah, of course, obvious. Of course.
But I was in a band with my church buddies.
We were what?
This is
exclusive.
Yes. We were called
I do know this.
The Scannables. Don't worry about it. Because
I won't. It's too good to worry about.
Because we were
a ska band.
It was a ska band.
Okay, not a punk band. This was a ska.
No, but that came from all of our obsession with, you know, NoFX and like we and a more niche MXPX, which was a little
Bay
more.
Area too?
Yeah, they were.
That's right.
And
crossover.
But in my mind, they were all from very far away. But I will never forget. We saw MXPX and Good Charlotte. Opened for them.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
In like a tiny venue in Raleigh, like I want to say my freshman or sophomore year of college. Because I drove the car, which would have made me 16. And sophomore year in high school. Yeah.
That is so badass. That's so such a badass bill.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts, actually. It was pretty, I remember.
Was that,
really,
was that your like first significant concert? Was that like
it was
the game-changing concert?
It was the first concert that I went to that I felt like it was a real
You're going to a rock show.
Yeah, people are like taking their shirts off and they're throwing water in the crowd because people are moshing. It was utterly out of control. I mean,
did you have parents who like listened to like Led Zeppelin or something, and they would tell you about like going to those shows back in the day, or did they not really partake in that?
Yeah,
kind of
no, my dad's brothers. My dad grew up in on Long Island, and several of his brothers were at Woodstock in 1969. So we were very much always aware of in the car, dad
That's
picked
cool
the music
shit.
And dad would school us about this is
oh
what you
God.
Need and he would
yes.
be, go
I'd like to throw in that my mom during college, I think, or right after college, sold the car her parents got her, or their parents' old car that she kind of inherited or whatever.
She sold it
and bought a Volkswagen camper in Germany with some friends and drove to the Isle of Wight. And she was at the Isle of Wight and saw Jimi Hendrix, saw Janis Joplin.
Come on!
We're talking everybody. We're talking like the big, that, what's the, that big year of, she saw everybody. She has stories for days.
Everybody who was in the 27 Club, everybody who died immediately after this.
Oh,
concert,
yeah, they were all in there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And no, still like the, and you know, she, at home, it was a lot of, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Bob Dylan, yeah, and Beatles, and all that stuff. And my dad loves Rolling Stones, Roy Orbison, a lot of, you know, it's like, I think that was another kind of very much, but at dinner every single night, my entire childhood, classical music was playing in the background every dinner.
This is something very telling about you. And now Drew Gehling just ran away, and I think just jumped out of a window somewhere.
Hey, doing that thing where I interrupt the conversation to remind the listeners, go support our guests by following them on their social medias. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find Drew Gehling at Drew Gehling, and you can find Julia Matt at Julia Matt, M-A-T. Back to the talk.
He's back.
What's up, Drew? Thanks for being here. I want to stay with what you just said, Julia, because you just painted such a great picture of yourself, and it kind of, it's a small segue into something, but I don't want to make it too much of a focus, because again, people should Google you guys and find all this stuff if they have not already. You are one of the most multi-talented types of singers I've ever met, in the sense that you really can. I have a great memory of singing Papa Roach with you at karaoke one time.
Yes, it's
but you, but you also created, co-created with our good friend Noel, you co-created a wonderful mini web series called Brooklyn Sound. And is that still up, by the way? Can people still find that and watch it?
I think
it?
It's great. Still, so, visit brooklynsound.com after all the years.
Go check that out. Visit brooklynsound.com. It's so good. And you'll all see what I'm talking about here. Julia Madison just voiced every style of music known under the sun, and how she was kind of raised under that umbrella. And you'll see it in full effect when you watch this, because she plays almost every character. She's like a Lorde-esque version of a pop star, and then you also have like these Peter, Paul, and Mary-esque style hippie folk singer songwriter guys, and it's just, it's completely entertaining, but your performances are so outstanding, and everything you just said made that series and your performance totally gel and make sense to me. Not that it didn't before, it was amazing, but boy, getting your a bit of your taste growing up, that makes so much sense. And now I'm going to go back and watch it just with so much more joy, knowing that you actually have that shit in your veins, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm. I think there's all, I've always, and it's one of the reasons Noel and I think connected creatively so quickly, is I think he was the same way. I always,
oh yeah, he definitely was.
Yeah. Like, Noel Carey, for, you know, listeners, my writing listener, partner, and a pal of all of us. Yes. I personally, I think I've always been obsessed with essentially every genre of music I can dive into. I think of very few that I can't get behind or like. Like, I think, and if it's something that I don't personally love to listen to, it's something I can also have fun trying to interpret or be play as a character or something. You know what I mean? I think, you know, I think Brooklyn Sound was born out of myself and Noel saying like, God, we love writing songs. We just start a band. And we, this actually happened. We wanted to start a band, but we didn't want to be limited by a certain genre of music. And so we were like, wouldn't it be great if we could just be like a bunch of different bands? Let's make a show where we're playing all these different kinds of music, because that's the freedom we want musically. And so I think now it's fallen into, it's what I find, I think, with Joel as well, with the advent calendar stuff, where it's like,
shout out, just the amount of projects we're listing.
Absolutely.
It's Noel's and Joel's around making, but like
a lot of Noel's, a lot of Joel's,
yeah, but like it's to me, it's like maybe most fun that I find these days is just making up songs in different genres and getting to play in that way, because just what's better than music is the best.
Yeah.
Julia's been spending a lot of her time hanging out under an overpass, just singing at cars as they go by, because she's lost her faculties during 2020.
It's very true.
I want to talk about the big stuff coming up, but you just mentioned something, and it's a big question for Drew, because I'm clueless when it comes to you, Drew. But earlier on, Julia, you said how you were raised by a businessman and you were also raised by an artist. And the business side of your family kind of, not pushed, but made sure you were aware the importance of an entrepreneurial mindset. And any artist really needs to do that. The art of being an artist is the hustle and finding the gigs that just kind of keep you afloat, whatever they are. You know what I mean? No actor goes from closing night to the next show. Not always, you know, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Drew Gehling does maybe, but not everybody.
Yeah,
does.
Nonstop.
But you just listed Brooklyn Sound. You just listed the Advent. I can't say it without choking on the word.
Carolinder.
Advent Carolinder, which became an amazing quarantine bit of entertainment as well. I'll go check that out on Instagram, featuring Joel Wagner and Julia Madison. It's outstanding. But what I know of Drew Gehling is that you had supportive parents. They said, you go into the arts if that's what is your outlet. That's how we feel supportive of you, is allowing you to do that. And then all I know is you've done big fat Broadway shows a lot. You've done big fat Jersey Boys. You've done, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, if my eyes didn't play tricks on me, you were in one of my favorite episodes of 30 Rock. Were you on that?
Fact. That is correct.
Fact. There he is. Okay, here we go. We're going to keep going. And of course, the big fat one that you probably are best known for was your turn as Dr. Pamalama Dibadab.
Pamalama Ding Dong in Watrous the Musical. This is correct.
In Watrous the Musical, yes. Actually, a Scandinavian person is translating as we talk. But yeah. I want to make sure that I get a sense of the hard times, because you do have this amazing looking career on paper. It is, and it's why I joke around that you're the more successful Drew. It's because you have quite an astounding resume. You've been able to raise a family on being an actor, as far as I know. But let's talk about this entrepreneurial mindset and the art of the hustle when you're an actor.
No,
what are some of those times that you had to kind of find the other thing or divert or you know, find another way to stay creative, not necessarily just fill the bank account, but maintain creativity?
That's an awesome question. Like Julia, my father was a businessman as well, right? So not, mm-hmm. and while not a person that necessarily was going to push me towards any kind of a profession in business or anything like that, but definitely was one that was always about like teaching me about the responsibilities of taking care of, you know, being responsible with money and being responsible with, and knowing that like nothing happens without hard work and like discipline and like delayed gratification and like making sure that, you know, you're putting in the time and the work to make the things worth it. But, honestly, it was like being in school, because your boy Kober and I went to the same, we both graduated from Carnegie Mellon at around the same time. He was 1 year
Amazing.
Behind me.
Amazing.
And the weird thing about that program was that like I went there thinking, oh, okay, everyone that goes here just does Broadway musicals all the time. And I spent my entire time there realizing that that's not really what I was built to do, because I'm a shit dancer. I mm-hmm. sing only like me. And mm-hmm. I found that I enjoyed acting and developing new work the most.
Right. You're not the kind of actor who goes to college and gets spit out ensemble, 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 rotating Broadway show after Broadway show. You're a fucking artist.
I'm not an artist. I'm 6.5 fucking feet tall. You can't like put me in the ensemble. I'm a tree. You can't put the sycamore like next to
Watch
the Munchkins and Wicked.
George of the Jungle, the musical. We know exactly.
With Drew as the tree.
Right. Yeah. Brendan Fraser is going to come back for this, and you're going to play the tree. Amazing.
Oh, sign me up. Anything Brendan Fraser does, I'm in.
Back to our 90s. Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. Dudley Do Right for real. I learned really quickly, like after graduating, like, oh, shit. I'm not going to just fall into the ensemble of Wicked and you know, make Broadway money. I'm not mm-hmm. going to do. I can't replace just any actor because I'm 22.
I'm going to go be the lead in other shows and make way more kinds of Broadway money.
I didn't. Like, the weird thing was, is like genuinely it was 2005. And if you were a tall white guy,
uh-huh.
you were going to probably do Jersey Boys.
It's so funny that you say that, because out of the gate you said, I sing like me, which is one of my favorite qualities about you, by the way. And that's why I'm going to continue to push this artist thing. I don't think you can be an artist unless you really understand your own individuality and your uniqueness. And right out of the gate you say, I sing like me. I'm not going to go be an ensemble singer because I have this voice. When it comes to Jersey Boys, that is a specific sound that they're hunting for so much that they send people to fucking camps. Some of them never come back. Some of them go and they...
they're still there.
There's a bunch of lost and confused 40-year-old Frankie Valleys walking around. But when you, like, you fall into a show like that, did you think it was a fluke, or were you like, oh, I've made it? What was the thought?
Honestly, it was the first time that I'd ever seen a Broadway show and gone, I can do that part. Yeah. I can do that. Yeah. Like, there, because up until that point, you know, you're watching, wow, that guy's an amazing dancer. Wow, that guy, you know, wow.
This is right out of college for you?
Yeah. Wow, that guy's Tarzan. Wow. You know, like, this was, right. I was looking at, like, a bunch of kinds of, like,
Tarzan.
Broadway dudes being like, oh, you guys are a whole different breed than myself. And so I see that show and I'm like, oh, wow, that's something I can do. But the hardest part about being in it was having it not be my thing. Yeah, you kind of end up doing somebody else's blocking, and you're standing here and you got to play, these scenes go this way. And
was it Robert J. Spencer? Was that who it was?
No, I was the Dan Reichard part. I was Bob Gaudio, right? So it was just like, you're really, you know, when you replace in any show, you're really kind of like, all right, this is the mold. You're here because you fit this mold. There's a shit ton of moving parts in the show. Don't mess up your moving part of the show. Now, shine within that box. Be the brightest box you can be, but like, that's where you are. And it was like, I was in the show for a while because it was, you know, it was a great way to learn how to do 8 shows a week. It was a great way to learn how to, like, have it be your job.
Is like boot camp a little bit for you.
For real, because, you know, you don't learn that in school. You don't learn how to, like, keep your voice. You don't learn how to, like, make sure that you can do 8 shows. You don't learn that. You know, there's just no way to do that. So, but at the same time, it was like a real crisis for me because I'm like, well, what if that's all there is? Like, what if I'm just gonna, the best I can hope for in another Broadway show is to go do a show that's already been open that I won't get to kind of have any kind of creative process with it. It's like I'm getting put in by the stage manager or the associate director. And, you know, and so when I got back from doing that show, there was like a 2-year period where I just kind of pounded the pavement, like auditioned and was not right for stuff and wouldn't get far, or auditioned and like got some close to some things, but just wouldn't.
And were you just basically kind of living off of, you know, the Jersey Boy bank account for a minute? And
like a young unmarried guy, like just kind of trying to figure out, you know, with not a lot of bills to pay and able to like just kind of do me. So
that's amazing.
So by the time like something came along that could like get me seen, because in that point you kind of figure out, okay, this is what there is. Like this body is what there is. This is what will get a job or not get a job. The skills that I have and work on and the way in which that I approach work is the only thing that I really can bring to the table. And so, and occasionally sometimes that works. I'm like super lucky in that I feel like I won a couple of really great lottery numbers. You know,
including your height. Absolutely. seriously, but it's great to acknowledge the gratefulness. And Julia's very similar situation. Right out of college, you get booked into a Broadway show, and it was a big deal revival at the time of Godspell. And that seems so up your alley since there's so much room to play. It's a little less structured as, well, you were part of the original cast of this revival. So not like Drew, handsome Drew, you get to kind of build from the ground up and invent, which is an area that you excel in, as we've talked about with Brooklyn Sound. And it's not because I don't want to talk about Godspell. This is kind of, I want to get back to Godspell. I want to keep with Drew for 1 minute though. I guess the question for Drew, hearing all of what you just said, coming out with that training that Jersey Boys gave you, And the training continues when you get out of Jersey Boy and you realize, oh, I'm not just hireable. I like have to kind of figure this out and continue to work and audition and audition. Was it when you booked Dr. Platypus that you, I'm never going to get the name of this character right. I swear to God.
I also won't correct you. I think the more out west we get is great.
I want to freak theater listeners out right now. That's the entire goal.
Yeah, it makes people really mad.
They should be.
I'm going to get hate mail and death threats, I promise. Was that the show where you felt, oh, this isn't a job, it's a career, in the sense that it's not about being in a show and a show and a show. It's about having the artistic fulfillment of creating something and establishing, like an original idea, your input, your interpretation.
The really cool thing, Waitress definitely like changed a lot about the way in which I looked at the businessy side of things, because suddenly after that show, I was able to kind of get into more rooms to do more cool projects. In that weird kind of way that ends up happening when you're in a new Broadway show that everyone goes to see, they're like, oh, what about that guy? Oh, that guy. Let's have that guy do the thing.
Do you feel like it gives you permission to do things you want to do, or does it just open doors for more opportunities you hadn't really thought of before?
I think it opens doors. In some cases, it can create permission about it. Yeah, yeah. But then that's all about like what's the artistic compass that you have inside you that says, what do I? Great, I'm getting asked to do this thing, but what do I really want to do right now? Do I want to?
Yeah.
Like take 5 years off my life to work on a new show to do that right now? Or do I want to kind of follow this other path that might be a little, that might be different from that?
Sure.
Funny, like Waitress definitely opened those doors, but weirdly, like the most oddly rewarding artistic New York theater experience I had was doing a really short run of a musical at Lincoln Center in like,
it was our dog, not a
what musical was that? Okay. There's, don't worry about it. Just raccoons running in the background.
Yeah, she's just skittering
just
around
visiting us very urgently.
Oh my God, she's too funny. It was this musical called A Minister's Wife that this guy Josh Schmidt wrote. He's the guy that did The Adding Machine and
oh God, I love The Adding
Machine.
Yeah,
yeah. And so he and Austin Pendleton, who
household name.
It was an amazing, amazing character actor. Your household name would know him from as being the guy who ran the company in Short Circuit. Yeah, there you go. He's also the original model in Fiddler on the Roof. We could talk about Austin Pendleton all day.
Oh my God. Okay. So I take my sarcastic, smarmy shithead comment back. That's amazing.
Him and Bob Balaban are my two just spirit animals in New York.
But Balaban, my favorite role in Seinfeld was played by Bob Balaban. Ugh. When he's the NBC exec.
Yeah.
And he goes, why are people watching this? Cause it's on TV. And he goes, not yet. That's the greatest delivery. He's so great. Anyway, I want to hop to Julia real fast. Cause we're going to wind down here a little bit as to not get snoozers listening to us, but this is a really exciting conversation because these are two really interesting perspectives coming from the support you both had, but artistically, you guys gel together as humans, but I really think you have such different approaches to everything that you do artistically. And we talked about Julia doing Brooklyn Sound and creating characters, which some people may disagree, but I think creating characters in a sketch kind of format is different than being an actor necessarily. It is a totally different skill set. Like, I don't know how you do it some of the time. It's amazing to me. And talk to me quickly about the beginning of your career, because you went to school to do theater, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a musical theater BFA.
And then you, right out of college, you were in Godspell and you were having the time of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, Broadway has not been the not been, but it hasn't necessarily been the end all be all for you. You have
right.
spread yourself out in so many things. You have an endless amount of projects. We've plugged a couple, but again, I just encourage people to look these people up. Talk about household names. Everybody I talk to on this podcast is or is about to become a household name. And I've been collaborating with Julia for a long time with music, and we've all done concerts together and writing shows and this, that, and the other. So when you were done with Godspell, Julia, after that run was done, what was the immediate thought, and then how did those thoughts evolve into what your life is now?
It's so interesting, yeah, because after doing a musical theater BFA, I got really lucky and did Godspell, and I think the reason that happened was because I got to create an original song for my audition. I got to make up bits, play characters. Awesome. The callback was some people's nightmare, some people's dream. It was here's your 10 people in a room with props. You have 20 minutes to come up with an entire play, and you're going to perform it for Stephen Schwartz. And it was like, that was my introduction to New York. And I was like, this is my calling. This is my dream. And so by doing it, it was a chance to write and create and make up bits and parts as a part of a Broadway show. But I think when the show closed, it wasn't as if I decided myself necessarily, like, I'm done with Broadway. Like, it wasn't for lack of auditioning. I very much continued going out for things and thinking, okay, what's next? And I found that slowly the Broadway kind of hustle and the filling a type and kind of being right for certain parts was just not where I was getting jobs or being necessarily fulfilled creatively. Cause it was a lot of, I was in the world of, are you a Glinda or an Elphaba? And I was kind of like, what if I want to be Dr. Dillamond? Like, can I be the old goat professor? Yeah. Like, what if I,
and you'd both, be a great old goat.
Yeah. And by the way, I went in for Glinda a million times and for Elphaba a bunch of times. Like, I was just not ever the clear, I was always a stranger option for any role. You know what I mean? Because I think I couldn't help very much being my own flawed, weird self in ways that I've come to celebrate in deciding I wanted to write more for myself and my friends and tell stories I want to tell. But, I feel like I remained in the Broadway community socially and through music and concerts and readings and stuff. But really, I think the year after Godspell, and also during Godspell was making my own comedy, doing my own comedy shows of original comedy songs.
Yeah.
And I made a comedy Christmas album. And then my friend Sydney and I wrote and shot a pilot that we submitted to the New York Television Festival. And then got a development deal with MTV through that. And then
I remember that. Yes.
From then on, it was kind of off to the races of like, okay, I think I can find.
You were making stuff.
Ways. Yeah. By making endless. Stuff to kind
endless
of really
content.
Create. Yeah. Endless content. It was like, then I made the Ruby Show and.
Yes.
And stringing.
Are those on YouTube, by the way? Can you find those?
There are clips of the Ruby Show, not the full show.
Still worth checking out, everybody. Go check out Ruby Manger. She is spelled manger.
Yes.
She is a character that Julia created, and if that doesn't deserve just a 1-hour special on Netflix, I really don't know what
she
does.
That
is such great
old
content.
Old woman alter ego. But I think like with all that, it's like I was piecing things together I was acting in commercials and eventually was writing for commercials and I don't know. Like I think of my 20s as this weird patchwork quilt of trying on many different hats and finding varying degrees of success. Because I never really wanted to necessarily leave the Broadway community. And I still feel like a part of that community in many ways, but it was funny to like enter the world and to dive deeply in with Godspell. And then over time, you just realize like, if you're not in a show, you're not doing a show, just kind of socially or at events and things, you just slowly become less familiar and more of a like, who's that? Oh yeah, you look, you just are not, the relevant thing is really interesting to me. And so
nature
I think
of the
I,
beast, yeah.
That's right. And so I think I grew comfortable with knowing that whatever happens for me, it's going to be deeply connected to things I create. And so I've always been that way. I'm talking back to childhood, like making movies in my room and creating plays and stuff. I've never not been that. So I think it was Godspell was a really amazing kickoff into the possibilities, and then showing me that I can write and create and entertain people, and it'll heavily often be comedy. And beyond that, you know, I love that it changes by the day and by the year, like what I'm working on. Cause I don't want to be limited by I'm an actor or I'm a writer or I'm this or that. It's like, I want to tell stories and make people laugh and laugh while making stories. And that holds it all together in one big bubble, you know?
That's what made, I really enjoyed working on that short film with you because we laugh so much.
Yeah.
And the short film being Stomach People. Yes.
That's
Stomach
right. People. Yeah.
Yes. Stomach People is out of Julia's insane brain. And I was in, we've shared an office while you began writing this. And
I just
remember the conversation before you even started. You just told us about these friends that you'd like throw up into your hand or whatever. And then you wrote, I think it was going to be a series, and then this movie that got filmed. And what Drew just said brings me to just a final little point to bring up. And it kind of just says a lot about all of us. I think we all do our best and we try our damnedest to continue working with the people we love and to continue working with the people that inspire us, because we get the best out of ourselves when someone is bringing it out of themselves. So, but I want to say thank you so much to both of you guys for taking the time, first of all, for exploring your childhoods with me a little more, going a little nostalgic with the 90s, and painting a really great picture for anybody who listens to this, the different paths and the amount of work it takes to become a working actor. Success is how we want it to look. So you guys have done such a great job being successful artists, and I love you both very much. Thanks so much for doing this.
We love you, friend. Love you, Drew. Thanks for having us.
Well, if you made it all the way to the outro, then go check your mail, because we just sent you a box of cookies. Thanks for listening to this episode of Now We're Talking. Now We're Talking is a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. Heard of them? Of course you have. You can find out more about me and this podcast at bpn.fm/Now We're Talking. Try to figure that out. And on Instagram at Drew Gasparini, and also on TikTok at The Drew Gasparini. Special thanks to our guests, Drew and Julia, and to our listeners for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream. We'll catch you next time.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.